call to order the August 10th meeting of the Sussex County Council. First item, the approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker, have you any changes?
Yes, we do have several suggested changes. First, the NRG Power Program update. The representative from NRG was unable to be here, so I'd suggest that we table that item. And then under executive session, personnel, if we could delete personnel and pending potential litigation.
We do have land acquisition.
Yes.
So there will be an executive session. If there's no other changes, I'll entertain a motion to approve the amended agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. In your packets were the August 3rd minutes. Were there any changes that council would like to note? If not, I'll consider the minutes approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President. We have one item, the Dear Tim Cooper and Sussex County EMS crew, the fireworks program. This year was a blast in 2010, thanks to you and other fireworks committee members. Thank you so much for your involvement and for such a wonderful experience. It's become a well-oiled machine, and we are so proud of the teamwork we used to get it done. We could not do it without your help. And that is from Rehoboth Beach Main Street, Inc. And there is one other, and it is, that's just a cover letter for that. That is the only one, Mr. President.
Does council have any correspondence they'd like to read?
I got a thank you letter from the Zwanendale Club for our contribution for their, maintain their clubhouse and the invitation to visit it.
I recall seeing a group email from someone suggesting they'd like it read into the record. If no one has it, maybe Mr. Baker can look into that for next week. If there are no other correspondence, we'll turn the meeting over to Mr. Baker, County Administrator.
Thank you. The first item is regarding board appointments with the Advisory Committee on Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities. The appointments that we currently have expire the end of August of this month, and we just wanted to bring this to your attention for your consideration for reappointments. Members are appointed for a term of 2 years, and there are two members appointed from each councilmanic district and three members appointed by the president.
Does council have any thoughts on this? Would they like to consider reappointing their members?
I'd like to reappoint my two members, yes.
Okay, Mr. Vincent's two members, I believe, are
James Mosley and Anna Short.
Okay, from the first. I would like to reappoint mine from the fifth, Sally, and Raymond Moore.
Yeah, I believe I haven't heard anything from my people if they're up for appointment.
Okay, you are in the fourth district, Mr. Cole?
Last time I checked.
Albert Clark and Robert Drain.
Well, I'd like to check with mine because I haven't heard anything. Doesn't mean that they want to continue to serve.
All right. Mr. Wilson, you'd like to check with yours too? Okay. I have a motion to reappoint the advisory committee members for the aging and adults with disabilities from the first to the fourth and the fifth councilmanic districts. Mr. Albert Clark, James Mosley, Robert Moore Sr., Sally Beaumont, Robert Drain, and Anna Short. Is there a motion to that effect?
So move.
Is there a second?
Yes.
If there's no discussion, we will take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. And Mr. Baker, maybe check with Mr. Wilson and Ms. Deaver as far as putting the others back on a future agenda.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you.
The next item are two ordinances from recommended by the Manufactured Housing Committee. As we discussed last week, we do have two more for discussion and possible introduction. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Lank, who can explain the two ordinances.
Last week, during the discussion on an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code, by amending Article 1 relating to definitions. We discussed definition for accessory buildings, manufactured homes, manufactured home park, and manufactured home park communities. And there were some deletions of a duplicate, or there's actually three locations where the definition of manufactured housing was a reference, and we wanted to make them all consistent. In our discussion on those ordinances, I raised a question about all the many, many words, trailer, mobile, throughout the code. As I stated, one paragraph had 26 references. It was one paragraph, but it took up a whole page, and that related to the parks. And what we've done, we would like to propose to amend that ordinance that was introduced last Tuesday to add an additional section 2, and it's short. It states to amend Sussex County Code chapters 1 through 116 by deleting the words house trailer, single wide, double wide, mobile home, or trailer, wherever these words appear in the code, and inserting in lieu thereof the word manufactured home. And in section 3 is basically the same, except we are deleting the words trailer park, trailer court, mobile home park, or mobile home community, wherever those words appear in the code, and inserting in lieu thereof the words manufactured home park. And that way we don't have to basically type the whole ordinance over again, the full 100 and some odd pages, because on every page there's a reference to a mobile home or trailer or trailer park. So, and it's been done in this manner before. It's been years ago since we did it that way. But and then in talking to Patrick Vanderslice with Everett's office, the state does it all the time in their legislation. So that would be an amendment to the ordinance that was introduced last Tuesday. So we either have to strike the ordinance that was discussed last Tuesday and insert this one, or just create this as an amendment to that same ordinance.
Have you or Mr. Moore a preference?
Either way will be sufficient. And but if we introduce the new ordinance, and it's not just an amendment, but it's an entirely new ordinance that has the changes to it, the additional two paragraphs. And when it's introduced, you can strike the one that was introduced last week and substitute in its place the new ordinance to amend Chapter 115.
Sounds like a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is the motion in order?
Yes.
Could you craft that? Maybe we can get a council member to make it?
Yes, if someone would move that we strike the ordinance amending Chapter 115 introduced last week and substituting in its place the ordinance that is before us today to amend 115.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Motion and a second to take the action as articulated by Mr. Moore with regards to the ordinance previously introduced. Is there any further discussion? Now we'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carry.
The second ordinance, which we discussed somewhat last week, was in reference to adjoining property or adjoining tenant properties that are affected by a variance that was granted by the board, so that that person may not have to apply to the board themselves a year from now because they want to do replace a unit that already exists or their shed that already exists. So what's proposed is that we amend Chapter 115, Article 27, 115-121 for variances by adding a new subsection 211H, which would read, no variance shall be required in a manufactured home park when a property that is adjoining a property that has received an approved variance replaces an accessory building or improvement with an accessory building or improvement of the same size and on the same footprint as long as setback requirements are met. And what we, if introduced again, we would, what I would attempt to do with this ordinance, if it's introduced, would be to combine the four ordinances into one evening of public hearings and one afternoon of public hearing before council. So the discussion would be those four ordinances rather than a change of zone to conditional use and the four ordinances.
When the adjoining property owner wants to go closer, not meet the setbacks,
he would need a variance.
Then he would need a variance. This is only...
No question.
This is only right if the adjoining property owner wants to place one in compliance.
Right. If...
Well, why would they need a variance if they're going to place one in compliance?
If I have an existing mobile, and my neighbor gets a variance to be 18 feet...
I got you.
...rather than 20...
Right.
...then a year from now, I want to replace my unit. But 18 stays, then I can still replace my unit without going for a variance. As long as I meet the setback and I'm on the same footprint.
Right.
Being the setback, being the 5 foot or 10 foot, whichever the park requires. They're different in some parks.
In other words, it wouldn't be maybe easier just saying okay, this will work, I guess.
And then we go to public hearing, get the input from everybody, I'm sure. And we'll see what we decide then.
Mr. Vincent?
I'm reading the draft we have in front of us. Maybe I got the wrong draft. Let's see. Did you read there about the same...
On the same footprint?
Okay, yeah.
We just amended that since it was sent out.
That's fine.
We found that as an error, so we amended it.
Yep.
So again, no variance shall be required in a manufactured home park where a property that is adjoining a property that has received an approved variance replaces an accessory building or improvement with an accessory building or improvement of the same size and on the same footprint, as long as setback requirements are met.
So we were actually requiring somebody to, even though they were within the setback prescribed by our ordinance, we were requiring them to go for a variance, even if, because the neighbor...
The spacing. And in this case, the spacing is not referenced because the spacing has already been established, but they still have to make sure they're 5 or 10 foot, whichever is required in that park.
Yeah.
And there still will be some variances, but it'll eliminate a few, the need for a few.
This does not require a vote, but it does ask that one member would introduce it today. If there's no further discussion, I'll open the floor for that introduction.
Yeah, I'll introduce it. I guess it'll help things. I'm just wondering if there's another simpler way to do it. But
I was frankly surprised, Mr. Cole, sitting in the Manufactured Housing Committee hearings and workshops, to realize that because a neighbor got a variance, that it could create a problem for the next door neighbor, that they would have to get one in the future. So this takes away that problem.
Well, couldn't we, would that problem exist in other parts of our ordinance? Is it where that happens, where even if, whether it's not a mobile home park, maybe in an MR district, if somebody gets a variance on his lot in a subdivision, wouldn't it still affect would the next guy, even though he's in compliance, have to do it?
Well, in most of the districts, you just have the setbacks.
Right.
Here you have the setbacks plus the spacing is how close the units
could
be.
So a guy, if Vance lived next to me, he got a variance to get closer to the line, I would need a variance as long as I was within the right...
Right.
That was bugging me a minute ago. I was trying to...
The kicker is the spacing requirement.
Right.
That's a real issue.
How about within agriculture districts? Isn't there a minimum that you have to maintain between, for instance, a chicken house and a neighboring dwelling?
Right.
And if that neighboring dwelling has asked for a variance to get closer to the line than what typically would be there, does that then encroach upon that farmer's ability? No? Okay.
No, it doesn't. We've experienced. You could build your house. Say you had a chicken house already, you can build your house as close as the setback allows. But you're realizing that chicken house already there, you don't have to meet the 200. If you as a farmer wants to build a chicken house, then you have to maintain the 200 foot from the residence on the adjoining property.
Even if that adjoining property owner asks for a variance to be closer to the line.
If you want to build a chicken house after the house is built, yeah.
But you would need to foresee your need to have a chicken house at a certain spacing, go to the variance of your neighbors and object.
If you had to, and I haven't seen that happen.
No.
We've had a few houses that have been built after the chicken houses have been constructed, and they just build at standard setbacks, or else they honor the distance, and typically it's not an issue.
So it's only when when the requirement is spacing.
That's the only place.
This is the only place in the ordinance. Okay, so other than that, I don't see it.
There's a spacing distance that's like, it's referred to as a setback as it relates to campgrounds, as it relates to poultry farms, manure sheds, hog houses, stables, and then the only other place that comes up is in the manufacturing park for spacing.
Right.
Mr. Cole has introduced that.
Thank you.
And Lawrence, I'd still like to look, review the park models, how we...
Yeah, I was going to state when I finished that. I haven't had a chance to pull all that together yet.
That's all right. I mean, just sometime, you know, keep it on your thing to-do list, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Link. Mr. Baker with the administrator.
First item on the administrator's report is Delaware State Police report. As per the attached report from the state police, 4,198 complaints were handled in the month of June, 1,414 criminal arrests were made, and 3,809 traffic arrests occurred during the month.
Yeah,
details are provided in the attached report. Dog control report, as attached is a copy of the July report from Delaware Animal Care and Control. As noted on the report, there were 559 service and bite case calls handled during the month. Also included is a revenue report received since inception of the dog license program in January. $83,955 has been collected by the county for dog licenses since January. Property tax bills, we are pleased to report that virtually all property tax bills will have been mailed by today for the fiscal 2011 tax billing. As previously noted, the property tax bills are due September 30, and interest after that date will accrue at 1.5%. And attached is a copy of the insert, which was sent with each bill.
Anything else, Mr. Baker? Anything for Mr. Baker from council? If not, we'll move on to Mr. William Lacates.
Good morning, Mr. President and Council. Today we're here to go over, and I will introduce the guest in a minute, the Housing Rehabilitation Loan Program. Feel quite honored. We have Cynthia Carney Crossing from the Director of Housing Finance from the Delaware State Housing Authority out of the Wilmington office. She will go over the main program, how from the start to the finish, but I will make a couple comments. I also have Dale McDowell, who does the processing application and the write-up at our end, and then forwards it to the Wilmington Housing Authority. Mr. Bray Whaley also is with us, who helps out. As in your packet, you received some information, and as you saw, we have six in the process this year working on fiscal year, and we've done 34 since 2005. The reason for the day's meeting is we think it's a great program, state and county, but it is very unutilized by the investors or the homeowners, and it's a 3% loan. And at that point, I'm going to turn it over to Cynthia.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Mm-hmm. And, Bill, I did bring some packets. I have enough for the council members.
Okay.
Could we distribute those?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I'm just going to keep one for myself.
Mine, though. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank Bill and thank you to the council for having me here today. I'm here today to talk a little bit about the Housing Rehabilitation Loan Program, HRLP. Delaware State Housing Authority, our mission is to provide services for low to moderate income homeowners, landlords, and investors to make available affordable housing. In our Wilmington office, we do that through homeownership services, foreclosure prevention programs, and the rehabilitation program that we have here today. The HRLP, as Mr. Lacates had referenced, is a loan, and it's designed to help homeowners and landlords repair their homes that may need major repairs to help with housing code items, major repairs that perhaps are safety items, or accessibility issues that we could help assist in the financing of that. The HRLP, again, is a loan. The terms are 15 years at 3% simple interest. So it is a very favorable loan. We want to make this program available. The income guidelines do go up to 115% of median income, and in Sussex County, that's about $80,400 for a household. Borrowers must apply through Sussex County, through Mr. McDowell, and the application process, again, Mr. McDowell will take the application, go through the process, and submit a compliance packet to Delaware State Housing Authority for review. Once that's approved, the work can begin, and we can do draws on the financing available. For homeowners, the loan amount is up to $35,000, and for landlords, it's up to $25,000. So you can see some significant repairs can be made.
$25,000 per home?
$25,000 per unit, yes, sir.
Okay.
So if you have a landlord perhaps that has two, three, four units, yes, they could get $25,000 per unit. In your packet, you'll have a brochure that really spells out the primary terms of the loan. It's actually a very easy product for homeowners and landlords to use. And you can see the types of items that repairs that might finance, that the HRLP may finance. Heating, plumbing, electrical, those are probably the primary. We see a lot of roofing, roofs being done, safety and health hazards. Again, for property eligibility, we encourage homeowners to contact their local administrating agency. Again, Dale McDowell is the contact here in Sussex County. And that's basically HRLP in a nutshell.
Does it have the income limits anywhere in your package?
The income guidelines, because they do change annually, we try to keep the brochure a little bit more evergreen. The income guidelines, I believe, are spelled out. They're not on the brochure, but they are on the website, and we encourage homeowners or landlords that perhaps don't have access to web to contact us.
All right. Okay.
But it is up to, again, $80,420 in Sussex County.
Okay.
Is there the same income limits on landlords as there are for the homeowners?
Great question. That number is for a homeowner. For a landlord, they must be dedicated to providing their unit to affordable rental units. So there are guidelines based on the HUD income guidelines for renters. They do change annually, and they are based on the family size. For a family of four, it's just about $40,000 as far as the household income.
And when somebody gets this money, I guess, is there follow-ups? I mean, do you actually check on to see if they're actually...
There are checks as far as the work being done. Once the work is complete, then we're hands off from that point.
But who guarantees that the landlord is renting to the income levels that supposedly this money is supposed to
have? Yes, sorry for that.
I know some people with expensive property at the beach that would like to fix
take
their properties up and rent it to expensive
people.
Affluent people like Mike Vincent who come down on vacation all the time.
There are annual certifications for the tenants.
There are annual.
Yes.
Okay, I was just curious. Okay.
Does it, maybe I'm just reading this thing, how many that we've done in this county since 05, I guess. It looks like, is that a small number?
Yeah. I mean, think it's very unusual. Our biggest success story is the Shockley town that was condemned at one time, and I've mentioned it before, and now one investor actually from Maryland has taken it and remodeled about 19 units all in a row. And at Seaford, we had an investor over there for several years in the earlier used to use it, but when the market got really good, this program fell off big time. Now we're hoping it comes back a little bit, but it's underutilized. And we've been everywhere, brochures, and we mentioned it at every public hearing at the communities and towns.
Well, there's probably some red tape that goes with it that landlords don't want to mess with.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Is this on our website?
Yes. Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
And we also have handouts. I have the income for Sussex County guidelines.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions? Well, great. Well, thank you again.
Could I make one comment? Yeah, just, I know Mr. Lacates's office also coordinates with other funding, other CDBG funds, and sometimes is able to utilize this with the CDBG to complete projects. And it certainly, I think it's certainly worked out well as far as I, you know, from everything I've heard.
Yes, Mr. Baker, in your packet, the white handout, it does show the other resources that are available. And the CDBG program, the Community Development Block Grant, that is another great rehabilitation program that's available. A little, slightly lower income guidelines, and some more, I believe that's a grant.
Yes.
So there's more a little bit more advantageous for the homeowners. But for some, they need some more assistance. Perhaps they're not income eligible for CDBG, so HRLP could be a good option.
That's it for me.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next agenda item is old business conditional use 1837. Mr. Lang.
We have one item of old business. It is conditional use number 1837, the application of Harold J. Bowden to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for renewal and continuation of a construction storage yard to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth Hundred, Sussex County, parcel containing 1.07 acres, more or less, lying southeast of Route 265A, 1,135 feet northeast of Route 1. Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on this application on June 24th of 2010, rendered their decision on July 14th of 2010. The council public hearing was on July 20th of 2010. The public hearing were pretty much the same before commission and council. Before you, we have provided a copy of the report from the commission. And on July 14, 2010, Mr. Ross announced he would not be participating in the discussion since he was not in attendance during the public hearing. Mr. Burton stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of conditional use number 1837 for Howard J. Bowden for renewal and continuation of a construction storage yard based upon the record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, this is a site of a conditional use for the same purpose that was granted by council in November 1993. According to Ordinance 937, approving the conditional use in 1993, the use of the property was also in existence for 10 years prior to that time. Because this recommendation for approval is for the use that has been in existence for more than 25 years, there will not be any change in circumstances affecting traffic and neighboring and adjacent properties. Three, this recommendation is subject to several conditions that are intended to clean up the current use of the property and limit any impact that the use has had on neighboring and adjacent properties throughout its existence. Four, this recommendation is subject to the following conditions. One, there shall be no more than 7 vehicles or pieces of construction equipment stored on the property, and all the equipment and vehicles stored must be operational. Two, there shall be no fuel storage on site. Three, as proposed by the applicant, the hours of operation shall be between the hours of 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. weekdays. Four, no blacktop or asphalt products shall be stored on the property. Five, there shall not be any signage permitted on the property. Six, any security lights shall be installed so that they are screened from shining onto neighboring properties or Old Mill Road. Seven, the approval shall be limited to a period of 5 years from the date of adoption of an ordinance approving the conditional use by County Council. Eight, this conditional use shall expire upon the transfer or sale of the property to anyone other than the applicant, Harold J. Bowden. And nine, there shall not be any repair work performed on site. 10, the construction storage yard shall be fenced to completely screen it from view of neighboring and adjacent properties. 11, the final site plan shall show the location of the fence surrounding the storage yard. 12, the final site plan shall indicate all areas for vehicle equipment storage, material storage, and employee parking. All of these uses shall be within the fenced area as shown on the final site plan. 13, the applicant's residence shall be separate from the fence construction yard to maintain the residential appearance of the property. 14, material stored on-site shall be limited to stone and topsoil. 15, the site is to be used only by one contractor. And 16, the final site plan shall be subject to review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. There was a motion, second, and carried with 4 votes to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions stated. That motion carried 4-0 with Mr. Ross not participating in the vote. And that's all I have.
Okay, and the fencing, it's not specified that it's 20 feet in off the roadway, is it?
It can be, but it should be noted as such.
Okay.
Just to clarify.
Well, I know it came in after the hearing, but I'm aware of a letter that came in from the opposition asking for that, saying that the applicant agrees to it. I don't think
Mr. President, if we're getting into letters that came in after the hearing itself, they should not be considered before this body.
Okay.
Does Ms. Deaver have the ability to make that suggestion on her own?
Absolutely. As yes. A condition.
Yes, I would like to suggest that. I think it's a reasonable request. And I don't know how to word that, Mr. Lank. Maybe you could help me with that.
Mr. Moore can correct me if I'm wrong, but in number 11, the final site plan shall show the location of the fence surrounding the storage yard, and said fence shall be, you said 20 feet?
20 feet
from Old Mill Road.
Mm-hmm.
We could add that into 11.
Yes, we okay. can.
I'll entertain that as a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion and a second to change number 11 as read by Mr. Lank, moving the fence 20 feet from the roadway.
Thank you.
Is there any discussion? Not, we'll take the vote just for modifying number 11. Mr. Wilson, excuse me.
It doesn't specify. It says that it does say it should make the property not visible.
Screen the property.
Yeah, screen
so it has to be
property.
Screened, so it would have to be a solid mm-hmm. fence.
Screening fence.
Oh, screen.
And that would be determined by the commission. It wouldn't be chain link or lattice.
Like a
it would have to be stockade or white vinyl or whichever.
Do we have setbacks for fences? I'm sure we do.
The fence can go on the property line. Mm-hmm. That was okay. The reason for the 20 foot mm-hmm. to get off the road. That way there's slight distance when you pull that to the entrance.
That's what's having me a problem. Well, if this fence is going to be blocking the view, if it's 20 feet in or 10 feet, you know, as long as it's set back legally, I don't really know the reason why we have to do that. Why it's
well, what you get into on typical front yards is it's 3.5 foot for a fence, unless it's chain link or split rail that you can see through anyway. If it's solid, it has to be no more than 3.5 feet in the front yard, and then as you get back 40 feet off a public road, which would be Old Mill Road is public road, then it could be up to 7.
If it's, yeah, but it says it's going to be a screen fence, so I assume it's not going to be able to see through it very
right.
well.
Right, won't be able
anyway,
to see through it.
So I don't see the purpose of that. I don't see the why it's 10 feet or 20 feet. Why can't it be put on the line? I mean, it's not going to cut down the noise anymore.
No, Mrs. Deaver's talking about at the front yard at Old Mill Road, 20 foot setback from Old Mill Road. That way the vehicle can be pulling out. Can see what's coming in, because otherwise their fence is 7 foot tall at the entrance, you won't be able to see.
That's good enough reason. I just wonder why was the reason other than just setting it back.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. No further discussion. We'll take the vote. This is just on the condition, not on the entire application. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Anything else that we want to consider with respect to the conditions?
Would you read that part about the one owner again?
The conditional use shall expire upon the transfer or sale of the property to anyone other than the applicant, Harold J. Bowden. He's the owner, but he leases the property to another party.
And it's going to be one contractor at a time?
One contractor at a time, right. Because they only have 7 pieces of equipment and vehicles. So
but he can't change contractor.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't say a specific contract, right.
Okay,
want to make sure. Mm-hmm.
Originally, it was Padula Construction Company, and then Tom Monroe the contractor who does driveways, asphalt driveways, took over from Padula after Padula passed.
All right. If there's no further discussion, we'll ask Mr. Moore to read the title.
Yes, Mr. President. It's an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for renewal and continuation of a construction storage yard to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 1.07 acres more or less, subject to the following conditions. One, there shall be no more than 7 vehicles or pieces of construction equipment stored on the property, and all the equipment and vehicles stored must be operational. Number two, there shall be no fuel storage on site. Three, as proposed by the applicant, the hours of operation shall be between the hours of 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. weekdays. Four, no blacktop or asphalt products shall be stored on the property. Five, there shall not be any signage permitted on the property. Number six, any security lights shall be installed so that they are screened from shining onto neighboring properties or Old Mill Road. Seven, the approval shall be limited to a period of 5 years from the date of adoption of an ordinance approving the conditional use by County Council. Eight, this conditional use shall expire upon the transfer or sale of the property to anyone other than the applicant, Harold J. Bowden. Nine, there shall not be any repair work performed on the site. 10, the construction storage yard shall be fenced to completely screen it from view of the neighboring and adjacent properties. 11, the final site plan shall show the location of the fence surrounding the storage yard, and said fence shall be 20 feet from the right-of-way of Old Mill Road. Number 12, the final site plan shall indicate all areas for vehicle equipment storage, material storage, and employee parking. All of these uses shall be within the fenced area as shown on the final site plan. 13, the applicant's residence shall be separate from the fence construction storage yard to maintain the residential appearance of the property. 14, material stored on site shall be limited to stone and topsoil. 15, the site is to be used by only by one contractor. 16, the final site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Okay, I'll entertain that motion.
I'll make the motion.
Second, please.
Second.
A motion and a second to approve the ordinance. Is there any further discussion? If not, we'll take the vote on conditional use 1837. Please articulate the reasons for your vote, Ms. Deaver.
I vote yes for the reasons stipulated by the Planning and Zoning Commission and with the amended conditions.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes. Approval of Planning and Zoning.
Mr. Cole?
Not voting. I did not participate.
Mr. Vincent?
Yeah, the hearing we had, the biggest concern I heard from the residents around there was the screening area and the fence. They're taking care of that. And it's been there for 25 years, and Planning and Zoning recommends approval. I vote yes.
I vote yes as well. It's an appropriate use with the conditions placed on it by Planning and Zoning. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Grant requests, Ms. Webb.
The first one today, Laurel Public Library.
And they request how much?
They requested $4,700 for leaks and other work.
$4,700?
Yes.
Make a motion we grant them that amount of money split between Councilman Phillips and myself.
Second.
Motion and a second to grant the Laurel Public Library $4,700. Help me with the math. $2,350 for me, $2,350 for Mr. Vincent. Mm-hmm. Is there any discussion? Take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
The Rehoboth Cooperative Preschool, they are a nonprofit.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did refresh my memory on that letter?
$1,000.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion and second to grant $1,000 from Mr. Cole's account to the Rehoboth Cooperative Preschool for operating costs. Any discussion? Take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Delaware Lions Foundation.
What did we give last time?
$500.
Sounds like $100 each.
$100 each.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion and a second to give $100 from each council account to the Delaware Lions Foundation. Any discussion?
Now that, is that going to be used for county?
Yes, it is stipulated that all grant money that goes to the foundation is to be used in Sussex County, and with their grant requests, they have listed the 09 and 10. They do a matching grant deal with the local Lions Clubs organizations, and they help the residents right in Sussex County.
All right.
We'll take the vote. Ms. Dever?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Mr. Moore, introduction of proposed ordinances?
Yes, Mr. President. We have one, an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an MR medium density residential district for a multifamily dwelling structure, two units, to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 6,000 square feet more or less. And it is the conditional use application of Kim Swain.
I'll introduce it.
And that's the only one, Mr. President.
Okay. There is no additional business to be brought before the council from the public. Does the council have anything before we ask for a motion to go into executive session? I'll entertain that motion.
You got it.
Second, please.
For purposes of land acquisition.
For the purposes of land acquisition, thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.